how much worse it would have been if Irene Martin had lived. Alia brushed hastily at her cheeks. When had she started crying? Diana squeezed her shoulder. "Listen to me," she said. "We're going to reach the spring. We're going to change all of this."
"You don't know that."
"Yes, I do. We'll reach the spring, we'll break the line, and there will never be another Warbringer. No girl will have to bear this burden again, including you."
"That's right," said Jason.
"You don't even believe there's a spring," Alia said, sniffling loudly.
I believe that if there was a start to this, then there has to be an end."
A buzzing sound broke the quiet of the room. Alia looked down at the phone. "Nim's here."
"Go wash your face," said Jason, taking the phone from her. "Perez will let Nim up. I'll have the files put on the jet and we can look them over during the flight. Both of you should pack a travel bag, too." He put his arm around her.
"Alia, we..."
She shook him off and stepped away from Diana.
"Don't," she said, ignoring the flash of hurt that crossed Jason's face as she headed for the door. She couldn't bring herself to let him comfort her. He couldn't fix this. The only thing that would make this right was the spring.
She closed the door on Jason and his files and the long shadows their parents had left behind.
Chapter 12. Diana found Alia flopped on a canopy bed, heaped with snowy linens in a large chamber at the other end of the hall. This room had a floor inlaid with wood in the pattern of a huge sunburst, and one wall was painted with a misty view of a lake dappled with pale pink water lilies.
"Monet," Diana said, finding the name in a memory of one of her art history lessons.
"I was really into that story, The Frog Prince, when I was a kid," Alia said to the ceiling. "Mom wasn't big on princesses, so we compromised with a lily pond." But the wide windows that overlooked a vast swath of parkland had already captured Diana's gaze. From this height, the city was transformed. It was like looking into her mother's jewel case. A city of silver spires and mysterious ironwork, windows that glinted like gems in the afternoon light. The park was rigidly symmetrical in its boundaries, hard lines demarcating where it began and the city ended. It was as if someone had set a door into another world at the center of the city, someplace lush and green, but contained on all sides by strong magic. Alia's room seemed full of small magics, too. Her desk was stacked with textbooks, and a little hourglass sat beside the lamp, but the sand in it seemed to be lodged at the top. Diana shook it, then flipped it, and gasped. "Is the sand in this flowing upward?" Alia rolled her head listlessly on the pillow.
"Oh, yeah. It's because of the density of the liquid inside it instead of air."
A framed photograph sat on the corner of the desk. A young Alia and Jason on a boardwalk. Their hair braided into tight rows, Alia's head studded with plastic barrettes. Behind them stood the same couple Diana recognized from the photo in the study, a man with a craggy, friendly face, his blue eyes sparkling, his cheeks reddened by the sun, and a woman with dark brown skin and a soft cloud of hair held back from her face by a cheerful red headband. They were all striking a silly pose, flexing their muscles like comic strongmen. Jason's smile was broad and open, his dimple carved deeply into his left cheek. Maybe Alia was right about how much he'd changed.
"And what are these?" Diana asked, pointing to a shelf of neatly stacked patterned boxes.
Alia groaned.
"It's super nerdy."
"Tell me." "I'm trying to collect the element that corresponds to my age every year for my birthday, like Oliver Sacks. He was a neuroscientist."
"I know. We have his books."
Alia lifted her head.
"You do?"
"We try to keep up with the outside world." Alia flopped back against the pillows.
"Yeah, well, here's hoping I make it to Argon."
Diana heard footsteps on the stairs and tensed, preparing herself. Alia might trust Nim, but Diana couldn't afford to. The bedroom door banged open and a girl stormed through, though she was less like a girl and more like a human whirlwind.
She wore open-toed boots that laced up to her dimpled knees and a smock dress that sparkled. The side of her head was shaved and the rest of her hair fell forward in a slick black sheaf that flopped over one eye. The other eye was black as jet and rimmed with gold, and her visible ear was studded with silver and gems all the way from lobe to top.
"I cannot believe you lasted all of, what, a week in Turkey? I thought this was supposed to be the big adventure, Alia. The moment when you cast off your chains and..."
The girl's voice broke off as she caught sight of Diana standing by the window.
"Sweet mother of apples."
"Pardon?"
"Nim,"
Alia said, a note of warning in her voice. The girl strode forward. She was round-cheeked, round-shouldered, round everything.
"Purnima Chaudhry," she said. "You can call me Nim, or whatever you like, honestly. God, how tall are you?"
"Nim," snapped Alia.
"It's a totally reasonable question, all in the name of research. Your text said we need clothes."
Nim hooked her hand around one of the bedposts and muttered,
"Please tell me this girl is less of a pill than the last one you forced me to hang out with. No offense," she said to Diana. "But, excluding me, Alia basically has the worst taste in people ever."
Her one visible eye narrowed.
"Are those bruises? What the hell happened in Turkey?"
"Nothing," said Alia, fluffing her pillows and propping herself against them. "Boating accident. They had to cut the trip short." Diana was surprised at how easily Alia delivered the lie. But how many tears had Diana hidden from Maeve? Some sorrows had to be borne alone. Nim crossed her arms, bracelets jangling.
"You look like you've been crying."
"The jet lag is just messing with me."
"You weren't gone long enough for jet lag."
Nim held up her hands. "I'm not complaining. Summer in this dump of a city sucks without you." She cast Diana an assessing glance.
"And you definitely know how to bring back a souvenir."
Alia tossed a pillow at her. "Nim, quit flirting. You were here for style emergency purposes."
"Your life is a perpetual style emergency. So much money, so little chic. Am I right?"
She turned to Diana.
"Who are you exactly?"
Diana took in Nim's bright, inquisitive eyes, her head cocked to the side. She looked like a sparkly, round-cheeked sparrow.
"Diana,"
she said, and smiled. "But you can call me Diana."
"Are you going to help us or not?"
said Alia.
"Of course I am. I love spending your money. But how did Jason convince you to go to a party?"
"Guilt bomb."
"Typical." "All right, my females,"
Nim said, whipping out a measuring tape and flipping open what Diana realized was a computer on Alia's desk.
"Let's go shopping."
"We can't go out," said Diana, though she hated to dampen Nim's enthusiasm. "We're already taking enough risks." Nim pulled out a pair of green plastic glasses and plunked them on her small nose.
"What's that now?"
"Jason's being strict on security again," Alia said hurriedly. "We've had some threats."
"Crazy, right?"
Nim asked Diana. "Can you imagine living on lockdown?"
"Come on, Nim, it's not like I have that many places to go."
Nim waved her hand dismissively.
"Someday, Alia, we will have all the places to go and all the clothes to go there in. And don't worry," she said to Diana, "the shopping comes to us."
They gathered around the computer on Alia's desk, Nim at the keyboard, Alia and Diana huddled behind her. And the next hour was a blur of confusing talk and images flying by on the tiny screen. Nim knew a great deal about textiles and design, and apparently she'd helped Alia shop this way before. She took Diana's measurements, all while catching Alia up on how she'd spent the last 2 weeks, the course she'd just finished at some place called Parsons, and how disgusting the heat in the city had been. Diana mostly listened and nodded, enjoying their chatter. Nim was a little like Maeve, but her cheer and boldness were somehow more vivid. It reminded Diana of the bright shelves of the drugstore, everything noisy with electric color, even the candy. You dance differently when you know you won't live forever. Was this what Maeve had meant? There was something reckless in mortal joy that Diana liked. It held nothing back.
"You're awfully quiet,"
Nim said, looking up at Diana suspiciously. She pushed back from the desk in her chair.
You're not silently seething over something I said, are you?
Diana startled. Not at all. Why would you think that? Nim shrugged, taking out her phone and sending another text to someone Diana thought she'd called Barney Byer.
Nothing personal. I just never get along with Alia's friends. We tend to do better on our own.
It's true, Alia said thoughtfully, leaning against her bookshelf.
And we're delightful, said Nim. Even though Alia is a total jinx, if something can go wrong around her, it will. I swear, she's a drama magnet.
Alia gestured at the screen. Focus. But Diana knew she was thinking about all of those tense moments, those disagreements, those broken opportunities for friendship in a new light. Diana peered at Nim, whose head was cocked to the side as she sucked thoughtfully on her lower lip and tapped at the screen of her phone. Did Diana feel hostile toward her? She didn't think so. She'd wondered if her conflict with Jason had been influenced by Alia's powers, but she and Nim seemed to be getting along just fine. The Oracle had said Alia would not cause her to sicken. Maybe her powers had no effect on Diana at all.
Nim, do you and Jason get on well?
As well as anyone can get along with that pill. Nim whirled in her seat and clutched a hand to her chest.
Don't tell me you're into him.
Alia banged her head against her bookshelf. Can we not? Nim fluttered her fingers as if casting a spell.
Girls lose all sense around Jason Corrales.
It's the billionaire factor, said Alia.
It's not just the money. It's the cheekbones, the icy disposition. I had three kinds of a crush on your brother before I matured enough to realize he's a total bore.
That isn't a secret, Nim. You used to steal his t-shirts. Nim folded her arms, but her brown cheeks pinked.
So?
His dirty t-shirts. Diana grimaced, but Nim didn't seem deterred.
All I'm saying is most guys who are that rich and that young are either awful legacies with the third after their names or gross internet entrepreneurs. Jason's mad science angle is hot.
Alia scoffed. Could have fooled me.
Totally different standard for girls. Guys don't care if you have a sexy brain.
Diana recoiled. You can't mean that. Alia tossed a pillow at Nim. She doesn't mean it. Nim, you're the worst.
I'm the best! And I can't help it if we live beneath the thumb of the patriarchy. Why don't you go yell at your brother for being a tool and only dating supermodels and socialites?
What's a supermodel? Diana asked. Nim stared at her.
Diana's homeschooled, said Alia. Under a rock? Asked Nim.
Her parents are just super weird. Hippies, kind of. You know, no TV, only public radio.
Nim took Diana's hand in both of hers. I am so deeply sorry.
Diana raised a brow.
I manage.
Do you?
Nim asked with a sincerity so profound Diana couldn't help laughing. Nim grabbed her other hand, holding Diana's wrists out.
Wow, cool bracelets. Are these soldered on?
Yes. I can't even see a seam. That is some amazing craftsmanship.
What are they? It's got to be an alloy, but...
Nim makes jewelry, Alia explained.
Nim dropped Diana's hands.
Don't say I make jewelry. That sounds like I'm someone with a bedazzler in an Etsy shop. I make art.
Alia rolled her eyes.
Okay, how about this?
Nim is really good with textiles and just about everything else visual, and that's why I invited her over to berate us.
Also, I'm great company.
Alia grinned.
That too.
What makes these models super? Inquired Diana, still curious. Do they have powers?
Nim burst out laughing. I love this girl. Yes, supermodels have the power to make you buy things you don't need and feel terrible about yourself.
Could that be true?
You use that word to describe me, Diana said to Alia. It doesn't sound like a compliment.
Alia hurled herself onto the bed and said,
It is a compliment. Nim just thinks she's being clever. Speaking of which,
Nim said, consulting her phone. Marie pulled a bunch of clothes for us. They should be delivered in a couple of hours. She hopped up on the bed and settled next to Alia. Prepare for perfection. I don't need to be perfect, Alia said, just passable. Nim held up her pinky. Bubble, bubble. Alia sighed and hooked her pinky into Nim's. Make some trouble. She cast a glance at Diana. This all probably seems really silly to you, right? Diana wasn't entirely sure what ritual she'd just witnessed, so she said, The dresses? Attire is important. It sends a message to everyone you meet. Yes! Nim declared, fists held aloft in victory. No! Wailed Alia, burying her head in the pillows. Now there's two of you. You said as much in the drugstore, Diana pointed out, leaning against the desk. But there's a difference between looking respectable and saying, look at me. Perhaps you should think of it as armor, suggested Diana. When a warrior readies herself for battle, she doesn't just worry about practicality. Alia rolled onto her side and propped her head on one hand. I'd think not dying would be the big concern. Yes, but the goal is also to intimidate. A general wears her rank. The same is true of athletes when they compete. That's true, said Nim. I read that football players play more aggressively when they're dressed in black and red. Nim loves trivia, said Alia. I love information. Diana lifted Nim's measuring tape from the desk and curled it over one finger. Where I'm from, I get a lot of attention because of my mother. Who's your mom? Is she famous? Only locally, interjected Alia. Anyway, said Diana, I know people will be judging, so I have to think about what to wear. My mother does, too. She's really good at it. And it isn't just about battle. Sometimes everything feels like a fight. You know, like just sitting through a dinner.
Or walking down the street, said Nim.
Or making it through an hour at a party, Alia said.
Diana found herself smiling. It's just an hour. We'll manage it.
And when that hour had passed, they would be on their way to the spring, on their way to changing the future. A knock came at the door, and Jason ducked his head inside. I need to head over to the meeting soon. Traffic's heavy.
Tell me you're not wearing that to the party, said Nim.
Jason had donned a suit similar to the ones worn by the businessmen on the train. He tugged at his cuff a bit self-consciously.
I'd planned to change into my tux at the office, and hello, Nim. So glad you can join us tonight.
Wouldn't miss it for the world, JJ.
Myers and Perez will escort you to the party. Dez will drive, but I got him to pick up a new car. If anyone's tracking our fleet, they're going to miss him coming and going.
Jason held out a piece of paper that Nim snatched from his hand. If you need to reach him, use this number. I got him an encrypted burner cell.
An encrypted burner cell? Alia repeated. You just had one lying around?
Alia, what do I always tell you? That you only watch reality TV as an anthropological exercise?
Nim cackled and Jason rolled his eyes.
No, he said. Enjoy the best, but prepare for the worst.
Wise, Jason, said Nim. So wise. Ever notice how hard it is to enjoy something when you're preparing for the worst?
He ignored her. Theo and I will meet you at the party at 8:30. Don't be late.
Oh, Lord, Theo's coming? Said Nim. Talk about preparing for the worst.
And what about, Diana hesitated, our ride home?
Jason gave a single grim nod. It will be ready to go. He shut the door.
Thanks for the invite,
Nim called after him. Jason's voice floated back through the door. Just don't set fire to anything. Nim pirouetted and struck a pose.
Nothing but the dance floor.
Who's hungry?
A cold supper had been laid out for them in the kitchen, and Diana realized there must be staff here, servants who came and went, barely seen. She hoped Jason's faith in their loyalty was justified, and that both he and Alia were right about the party being a worthwhile risk. Even so, she was glad that they weren't leaving for Greece right away. Once they'd broken the Warbringer line, Diana would have to return home to whatever consequences might be waiting. With Jason's jet at the ready, she could at least enjoy a few more hours to observe the mortal world. There was so much to see, and if she was honest with herself, she could admit there was something to be said for being Diana Prince, something freeing about being judged on her own words and actions, instead of her origins or her mother's choices. As they hovered around the kitchen counter, piling food onto their plates, Diana wondered if Alia and Jason ever used the huge dining room or threw parties on their grand terrace. Or was it always just the two of them and the occasional trusted friend, sharing this huge home with the ghosts of Alia and Jason's parents, eating standing up at their counter, looking out at the beautiful view? Diana had felt so alone on Themyscira, but Alia was just as isolated in this massive city, maybe more so. The palace at the Ephesium was large, but it had been built as a communal space, one where people came and went to seek audience with their queen, where classes were taught. The women who served Diana and her mother were also their friends, the same people with whom they ate and trained. Everyone served Themyscira in some way, but they were all warriors, all equals. It was one of the reasons many believed there should be no queen at all, just an elected council. Maybe this quest would free both Diana and Alia. Maybe it would give Diana a chance to truly belong among her sisters, and Alia the opportunity to live her life with some measure of peace.
"Funny how you neglected to mention that Theo Santos is going to be there tonight," Nim said as she stuffed her mouth full of cheese.
"I didn't know," said Alia.
"You should have told me so I could better gauge how much cleavage you wanted to show."
"First, you'd have to find me some."
"Who's Theo Santos?" Diana asked, selecting a cluster of grapes from a bowl.
"Jason's junior sidekick."
"He's a family friend," said Alia.
"Hot in a gangly, not hot at all way."
"He's objectively attractive," Alia protested.
"He's a complete loser. He spends all his time over here or in some dark room gaming and avoiding actual human contact."
Alia tossed a carrot at Nim.
"Actual human contact is overrated."
When the dresses arrived, Perez went down to retrieve them with Nim in tow. They returned with two metal racks laden with large dark bags dangling from hangers, which Myers helped carry upstairs. Diana felt a bit guilty watching them struggle up the steps, but she thought it best to let them manage on their own. Back in Alia's room, Nim immediately began unzipping the bags and yanking them off to reveal swathes of shimmering fabric and beading. There were several smaller bags filled with just shoeboxes and sheer wraps. Alia sighed.
"Let's get this over with."
Diana nudged her with her elbow.
"Armor, remember?"
Alia squared her shoulders and took her pile of dresses into the bathroom. "Those who are about to die salute you."
"I don't know why I even bother," grumbled Nim as they perched on Alia's bed to wait. "She always picks the most boring thing on the rack, always in basic black. If it's shaped like a sack, even better."
"Maybe it feels easier that way, just being invisible instead of always worrying what people think of you." Nim's voice was surprisingly emphatic.
"But that's a choice too, right? Because people are always going to look. They're always going to judge, so you can say nothing, or you can at least answer back."
Diana had the sense that Nim wasn't talking about Alia at all. The tiny girl's clothes were distinctive, her manner of speech decisive. But her confidence was vibrant and spiky, like a bright flower guarded by thorns.
"What do you think people see when they look at you?"
Nim turned to her.
"What do you see?"
"A bold girl, talented and audacious." Nim dropped backward in an exaggerated swoon.
"Could you just stay forever?"
"What was that thing you and Alia did?"
Diana said, trying to remember.
"Bubble, bubble."
"It was a play on Shakespeare, wasn't it?"
Nim propped herself up on her elbows.
"I know it's goofy."
"What does it mean?"
Nim slid off the bed and crossed the room to where a collage of her and Alia was propped on a dresser. She plucked a photo from the frame and held it up. Three girls in shredded black robes with pointy hats. When Ollie and I were freshmen, we both got cast as witches in Macbeth along with this Thai kid, Prita. That's right, out of the whole school, they cast the three ethnic kids as witches. People would see us in the hall and pretend to shriek and cry. They thought it was hilarious. Diana had always regretted not growing up with other children, but that sounded awfully cruel. What did you do? Nim tucked the photo back into the collage. We just went for it. We cackled and went berserk every night and made sure to always get our lines wrong. Bubble, bubble, Diana smiled. Make some trouble. Come on, Alia, Nim shouted at the closed bathroom door. You have to pick one, and we all know it's going to be the black dress with the long sleeves so you can school marm it up. The door opened, and Nim's jaw dropped. She didn't pick the black one, Diana observed. No shit, breathed Nim. Ollia wore a dress of shimmering gold scales that moved like light glinting off water. No, like the sun off a warrior's helm. Did you hit your head in Turkey? Nim said in disbelief. Ollia grinned at Diana and cocked her hip. Armor. Chapter 13. They were more than a little late. Nim pinned up half of Alia's braids in a crown and wove a gold chain through them, then chose a garnet-colored jumpsuit for herself that she paired with terrifyingly high heels. She picked a strapless midnight blue gown for Diana. The fabric was of a fine quality, but it felt stiff around the waist and hugged her hips too tightly, as if it had been constructed with little thought to comfort. It looks good, said Alia. Elegant. Diana frowned. I wish it had another slit up the side. One is classy, two is trashy, said Nim. One is pointless, replied Diana, wondering what refuse had to do with it. Two would make it easier to run in. Pretty sure there's no red carpet obstacle course, Ollia said as Nim tossed Diana a slim silver bag. I'm going to need something larger. Why? Said Nim. That clutch is perfect. Diana removed the lasso from the plastic bag. I need something for my things. Myers and Perez would transfer the rest of their belongings, including her leathers, to the jet, but there was no way Diana was parting with her mother's lasso or the heartstone. What is that? Nim said, reaching for the golden coils. What is it made out of? Diana hesitated, then let Nim run her fingers over the glimmering fibers. It's kind of an heirloom. I mean, it's gorgeous, but you can't carry it around like you're going to hogtie the DJ. It will definitely attract attention, said Ollia. Wait, Nim said. Give me that. Diana frowned, hesitant. What are you going to do? Eat it, Nim said with a roll of her eyes. I'm not going to hurt it, just trust me. She laid the rope on the desk and turned her back to them, making little humming noises as she worked. A moment later, she hopped onto the desk chair and held up an open work capelet of shimmering knots. It was somewhere between a shawl and a shrug. Turn around, you magnificent tree. Diana let Nim help her into the glittering creation and looked at herself in the mirror on the back of Alia's closet door. The lasso felt cool against her skin, its weight light over her shoulders, but it glinted like gold when she moved, as if her arms had hooked a field of falling stars. Perfect, said Nim with a happy sigh. And it was. Bolder and more whimsical than anything she'd ever worn before. It was fun. She had always let her mother dictate what she wore, let her desire to belong, the wish to look like an Amazon, make her choices. But tonight she could look like anything she wanted. A laugh rose in her throat, and she spun in a circle, arms out, watching the gold flash at the corner of her eye. She felt transformed. Nim, said Diana happily, you're a genius. Guilty as charged, but the hair is going up. This look needs more neck. Nim pinned Diana's hair into a twist, and then they were racing down the stairs. Myers and Perez were waiting to escort them to the car, and rode in the back seat with them the short distance to the museum. "There it is," Alia said, pointing through the dark glass. Diana glimpsed the outlines of windows, high and arched, glowing with light in the gathering dusk. Des continued on, and Diana realized he was circling the building so they could enter away from the main doors. When they stopped, Myers and Perez spoke briefly into their sleeves. It took a moment for Diana to understand they were wearing communication devices. They exited the car first, and Diana saw more guards at the door, but she kept close to Alia anyway. She wasn't about to trust these men just because Jason did. They entered a shadowy, high-ceilinged hall. In the distance, Diana could hear voices, the swell of music. She remembered being a little girl in the palace, falling asleep as the sounds of Amazon revels continued in the courtyard below. The museum felt a bit like that now, as if the adults were having a party while the rest of the building had been put to bed. She saw two men approaching and shifted her stance so she could block their path to Alia.
"I said 8 o'clock, said Jason's voice as he stepped into a well of light. "You..."
His voice broke off abruptly as his eyes locked on Diana. There was that strange look she'd seen on male faces all morning. Gaze stunned, mouth slightly ajar.
"What did I tell you?" murmured Nim. "I know what I'm doing."
Jason had changed since they'd seen him that afternoon. He still wore a suit, but it was sleek and black, and its lapels looked almost like burnished metal. He seemed to remember himself. A scowl broke over his face.
"You're late."
Nim shrugged.
"It takes time to look this good."
"You can work as hard as you want," said Jason's companion, a gangly boy with dark brown skin and hair that stood up from his crown in exuberant twists. "You'll never be as fine as me."
"What a surprise," said Nim. "Theo is with Jason. It's almost like he doesn't have something better to do with his time."
"Can we not start this tonight?" said Alia.
"That's right, Nim," Theo scolded. "Show some maturity. I don't want you poisoning the new girl's mind against me."
"Hi, new girl."
"Theo," Jason said warningly. "I just said hi, not even hello. I kept it to one innocent syllable."
Theo Santos was a little shorter than Jason and far leaner. He wore a snug suit of dark green fabric with a showy sheen and an open expression that made him look far younger than his friend.
"I stand corrected," Theo said, jamming his hands into the pockets of his trousers and rocking back on the heels of his pointy-toed shoes. "You guys are almost as gorgeous as I am."
"Weak," said Nim. "We're going to need a higher caliber of compliment."
"If I must,"
Theo said as they started toward the noise of the party bracketed by Myers and Perez.
"Nim, you look like a delicious confection. A walking, talking, probably poisonous, petit four."
"In that case," said Nim, "bite me."
"And you," he said, looking at Diana, "you look like a star-spangled slice of hell yeah." "Who are you, anyway?"
"She's one of Alia's friends, so leave her alone," said Jason.
"Don't mind him," said Theo. "He's just bitter because he got stuck with me as his date."
"I'd think he would be pleased to escort the most gorgeous among us," said Diana.
Theo barked a laugh. "Oh, I like her plenty."
"What about Alia?" said Nim.
"Shut up, Nim," Alia said under her breath.
Theo glanced over his shoulder and gave a cheerful thumbs up. "Alia looks really nice, too."
"Gosh, thanks," Alia muttered.
They entered a vast room teeming with people and echoing with sound. It was an extraordinary chamber. The far wall tilted at an angle like the side of a pyramid and was comprised entirely of windows that showed night falling over the park beyond. Partygoers sat at the edge of a rectangular reflecting pool bordered in slate stone, and others clustered around tables set with white orchids and glimmering candles. But the focus of the room was what Diana realized were ruins, a vast stone gate that she suspected had once led to a courtyard and the columned temple itself, covered in hieroglyphs.
"My mother is older than these stones," she thought as they joined the swarm of guests. In the mortal world, my people are the stuff of museums and myth, legends, artifacts.
Hippolyta and the first Amazons had vanished from the world long before this temple had been built. Diana looked at the partygoers, drinking, laughing, lifting glasses of wine to their lips. Lives like the wing beat of a moth, there and then gone.
This room was designed to mimic the place where the temple was originally located, said Nim, eyes sparkling as they made their way to one of the tall tables. Heads were already turning at the sight of Jason and Alia, hands lifted in greeting, beckoning them over.
The pool represents the Nile, and the windowed wall echoes the cliffs.
You know what no one asked for? Theo said. Trivia.
Jason glanced at Theo.
Go find yourself some champagne.
Theo saluted.
That's my kind of ultimatum.
Good riddance, Nim said as he loped off.
I don't know what it is about that guy, but I constantly want to shove him down a flight of stairs.
I have a pretty good guess, murmured Alia.
And he couldn't even be bothered to pay you a proper compliment, said Nim, her glare tracking Theo as he wended his way through the crowd.
It's fine, said Alia, but Diana didn't think that was true.
I appreciate that you made an effort, Jason said stiffly. His gaze touched briefly on Diana.
You look nice, all of you.
Very smooth, said Nim.
You're lucky you're rich or you'd never get any action at all.
Diana waited for Jason's sharp retort, but instead that broad grin reappeared, his dimple flashing.
You're forgetting how good-looking I am.
Alia rolled her eyes. Can we just get this over with before I have to find a potted plant to throw up in?
Jason straightened his cuffs, his sober demeanor returning as quickly as it had vanished.
Yes, but that's the last eye roll for the next hour, deal?
Wait, I need one more. You can't just cut me off like that.
Alia rolled her eyes theatrically.
Okay, I'm good.
Jason's mouth pulled up at one corner, as if he was fighting not to grin again.
I expect smiles and an attempt to look like you're happy to be here.
That wasn't part of the deal.
Alia.
Alia threw her shoulders back and pasted a cheerful smile on her face.
Better?
Slightly terrifying, but yes.
Hold on, said Nim. You need powder.
As Nim touched up Alia's makeup, Diana took the opportunity to murmur to Jason, I saw the armed guards posted at the eastern and southern doors, as well as the entry.
But?
They're spaced too evenly against the wall.
I'm not a fool, said Jason. There are members of the security team dressed as partygoers as well.
Two by the buffet, one by the musicians, and at least three near the western perimeter.
Jason started, his surprise evident. How the hell did you spot them?
Diana frowned. It was obvious, wasn't it?
I can tell they're carrying weapons by the way their clothes hang, and they hold themselves differently than the other guests.
Jason's eyes scanned the crowd, and she wondered if even he could tell where his people were.
Just stay alert, Diana said. If I can spot them, our enemies may be able to as well.
She was prepared for a rebuke, but Jason simply nodded.
And you guys may want to keep moving, Diana said as a nearby waiter shoved another waiter, knocking his tray of food to the floor. Don't stay in any one spot for too long.
She still didn't understand the limits of Alia's power or how it worked. It could reach across worlds, but proximity did seem to matter.
Understood, said Jason.
Are we doing this? Said Alia. Because I'm thinking about drowning you in the punch bowl and just making a break for it.
Jason nodded and offered her his arm. Under his breath, he said to Diana, Keep us in your sights.
I'll try not to get in your way, she murmured.
He stiffened, and then she saw the corner of his mouth twitch again. Still an imperious bully, but at least he could laugh at himself. And maybe he'd begun to realize she was an asset. She didn't want to fight him every step of their journey to the spring. Diana spent the next half hour drifting through the partygoers with Nim, making sure to keep Alia and Jason within view. It wasn't easy. The room was crowded, and the way voices bounced off the stone set Diana's teeth on edge.
She also felt like she was trying to read too many signals at once. She'd successfully picked out most of Jason's security team, but the party itself felt unwieldy. On the surface, it didn't look radically different from the celebrations on the mascara. Though the clothes might be cut differently, it was still a collection of people in silks and satins, glasses in hand, some bored, others eager. But there was something odd about the way the crowd separated and then reformed. The men would step forward to greet each other as their female companions hung back. Then a moment later, the women would engage, shake hands, possibly embrace. Power moved in its own way here, driven by unseen currents, and it eddied and flowed primarily around the men. I don't belong here. The thought echoed loudly through her head, but she wasn't sure if it was her voice or the oracle's that spoke with such conviction. She shoved the thought away. In an hour, she'd be on her way to Greece. By this time tomorrow, they'd have reached the spring and her quest would be at its end. For these few moments, she could let herself enjoy the newness of this place. She noticed Nim murmuring names under her breath. Do you know everyone here?
No, but I know who they're wearing.
She reeled off a series of Italian-sounding names. More trivia?
Information. Design is all about conveying information. This whole room was built to convey messages you don't even know you're receiving. The sight lines, the way the tiles are laid into the floor.
You see the world differently.
Seeing is easy. The hard part is being seen. That's why I'm always trying to get Alia to go out more.
Nim plucked a skewered shrimp from a passing server. When I started at Bennett, it felt like everywhere I went, people weren't seeing me. I mean, they saw me. Boy, did they see me. But I was just the short, fat Indian kid who brought weird food for lunch. What changed? Asked Diana.
Alia. She was the first person to look at my designs and tell me they were good. She even wore one of the first dresses I made to a dance. It was truly hideous.
Diana had to laugh, but that did seem like something Alia would do.
She's always been the one to prop me up, said Nim, and make me stick with designing.
What about your family?
Please, they have to tell me I'm a good designer. That's their job.
Diana thought of her mother saying, I didn't expect you to win.
Not necessarily. Oh, man, do you have one of those tough love families? I just don't buy into that.
Why not? Diana asked cautiously.
Because the whole world loves to tell us what we can't do, that we aren't good enough. The people in your own house should be on your side. It's the people who never learn the word impossible who make history, because they're the ones who keep trying.
The very air seemed to crackle around her as she spoke. Diana considered telling Nim she'd make a great general, but opted for, Alia is lucky to have you as a friend.
Yeah, well, we're both lucky. I don't know many people who would put up with me.
Alia caught sight of them by the reflecting pool and separated herself from the couple she and Jason were speaking to, scurrying over to them as if afraid Jason would snatch her back.
Please kill me, she moaned. My cheeks ache from smiling and my toes are throbbing in these shoes. I swear this is the longest hour of my life.
Boo-hoo! Big party where everyone wants to meet you, said Nim.
And don't you dare speak ill of those shoes. They're perfection.
I can't tell if your brother is pleased, Diana said, glancing over at Jason, who was listening intently to someone and nodding his agreement. He seemed at ease, his posture relaxed. But Diana could see the tension in his shoulders. He held himself as if on guard, unsure of where the attack might come from, but certain it would come nonetheless.
He doesn't like these parties either, does he?
You noticed? Alia said, scanning the crowd. I hate who he becomes at these things. It's like he's an actor in a play. He smiles and chatters, but I know he hates every minute of it.
Speaking of hating every minute... Nim said, her expression turning sour.
Theo was headed their way. I cannot take his nonsense right now. I'm going to go ask Gemma Rutledge to dance.
Is she gay? Asked Alia.
Who cares? She's wearing Badgley Mischka. I just want a better look at the dress.
Aw, said Theo as he approached with two full flutes of champagne. I chased Nim off. Such a shame. I swear that girl gets worse and worse.
Alia pursed her lips. Leave Nim alone.
Will do. All alone.
And what are you doing with champagne? None of us are old enough to drink.
Theo took a big gulp from one of the glasses.
Don't tell me you're going to send me packing, too.
Diana followed Theo's gaze to where Jason had moved onto a group of young men, all of them with summer tans and artfully shaggy hair. Their raucous laughter, the way they took up the space around them, reminded her of the businessmen on the train. And there was something in the way they surveyed their surroundings. They look at the room as if they own it.
You don't say, said Theo.
Some of their fathers are on the board, said Alia. Jason's just doing his job.
By joining the Legion of Bros?
Are they a club? Asked Diana.
Pretty much, said Theo.
And Jason's hoping, if I'm not around, they'll forget he's black and teach him the secret handshake.
Diana took a longer look at Jason, remembering what Alia had said about how the world saw her. Maybe Jason had good reason for the wary way he carried himself.
Think of it like this, Alia said. If Jason waved you over, you'd actually have to make conversation with those guys.
Theo shuddered. They'd probably make me talk American football.
And how much they love the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Theo hissed. Stop it.
And Dave Matthews, Alia said ominously.
Theo threw his arms over his head.
You monster!
Alia waggled her fingers at him.
And how they once saw Jimmy Buffett live at Myrtle Beach!
Theo flopped across the table as if he'd been grievously wounded.
Save me, new girl! He rasped. You're my only hope!
Diana had no idea what they were talking about, or the names of the demons Alia was invoking, but she moved one of the candles out of the way so Theo's sleeve wouldn't catch fire. There, she said. She nodded toward Jason, who had detached himself from his friends and was heading toward them.
I'm afraid your reprieve may be over, Alia.
Quick, she said. Stuff me under the buffet.
Too late, Theo said, righting himself and taking another gulp of champagne.
Have you come to drag me back already? Alia asked Jason.
You made a commitment.
Alia,
said a booming voice, and Diana saw Theo flinch. A barrel-chested man with a salt-and-pepper beard approached the table, with another man in tow. He swept Alia into a hug, then stepped back to look at her.
It's been too long. Jason said you had summer travel plans.
Alia smiled. I didn't want to miss the chance to meet some of the Foundation donors. Diana was impressed with how smoothly Alia lied, even as she realized how easy it must have been for her to pretend she intended to visit the spring with Diana or to toss the cell phone into the bag, knowing her brother would use its signal to track them.
Remember that, she warned herself. For all the dresses and the laughter and the ease you feel, remember how little you know these people, how easily deception comes to them.
I'm delighted you're here and taking an interest, said the bearded man. You should have seen your brother at the board meeting earlier. He's a natural.
I had a good teacher, Jason said, though he looked pleased.
Dad has always been great at telling people what to do, said Theo, taking a swig of champagne.
Dad. So the bearded man was Michael Santos, Theo's father and Alia and Jason's godfather. Next to him, they looked impossibly young.
Michael chuckled easily, but the mirth didn't reach his hazel eyes.
I can always count on Theo to keep my ego in check.
He turned away from his son.
Alia, Jason, this is Dr. Milton Han. He's doing fantastic work in environmental remediation, and I think he could take Corallus Labs in some interesting directions.
Dr. Han shook Jason's hand. I knew your father at MIT. He was one of the smartest and most creative thinkers I ever met.
I can assure you we're continuing in that tradition.
I was just reading about some exciting work in biofuels, said Alia. Is your research focused primarily on the use of bacteria for waste disposal or conversion?
Dr. Han seemed to startle as if he was actually looking at Alia for the first time.
Ideally, conversion. But that may be a long way off.
Theo laughed softly and said under his breath, Do not test Alia Corallus, girl genius.
Diana remembered what Nim had said. The hard part is being seen. She wasn't sure what Theo saw when he looked at Alia, but he was certainly paying attention. As Alia and Jason fell into conversation with Dr. Han, Diana heard Michael mutter to Theo,
"Getting a quick start, I see."
He glanced at the two glasses in Theo's hands. Theo's smile faltered, but he just said,
"Aren't you always telling me to apply myself?"
"What are you doing here? This is an important night." Theo downed the glass.
"Jason wanted me here, so I'm here. Shocking, I know."
"You will not embarrass us tonight," Michael whispered furiously. "Not when so much is on the line."
"Have you met Diana?" Theo said. "Diana, this is my father, Michael Santos, the savior of Corrales Labs. He's quite the strategist, but not what I would call a lot of fun."
Michael ignored him and offered Diana his hand.
"A pleasure. Are you one of Alia's friends from Bennett? She's usually with that pudgy little Indian girl."
"I'm not sure who you mean," said Diana, feeling her anger prickle. "I've only met her friend Nim, the brilliant designer." Theo beamed and held up his remaining glass of champagne.
"How about a sip to wash the taste of your foot from your mouth?"
"Just make yourself scarce," hissed Michael.
"I would," said Theo loudly, stepping past his father. "But I promised Alia a dance."
Alia looked over.
"You did?"
Theo snatched her hand and bowed theatrically.
"You're not going to change your mind, are you?"
He dragged her after him to the dance floor.
"My fragile heart couldn't take it."
With a nervous glance at Dr. Han, Michael laughed again.
"Spirited boy. If he would just apply himself the way Jason does..."
But Diana wasn't listening. Her attention was focused on Alia vanishing through the crowd. Her gaze met Jason's and he held out his hand.
"I'm so sorry, Dr. Han," he said, "but I have the uncontrollable urge to dance."
Diana's brows shot up. Maybe not all mortals excelled at subterfuge. She took Jason's hand and they wended through the partygoers to the dance floor. Diana allowed herself a small sigh of relief when she spotted Alia and Theo swaying together in the spangled light. Alia was laughing and seemed to be all right, but Diana didn't intend to lose sight of her, no matter how many guards Jason had posted. Jason led her onto the dance floor, sliding his hand beneath the golden fall of the lasso shawl as he drew her closer, his fingers brushing the bare skin of her back. She stiffened, then flushed when she realized he'd noticed.
"I have to touch you if we're going to dance," he said, sounding bemused.
"I know that," Diana replied, bothered by the edge to her voice. "We don't dance like this where I'm from." Alia laughed again, and Theo spun her beneath his arm and into a dip. Or like that, for that matter. It was comforting to focus on Alia and Theo instead of the scrap of distance between her body and Jason's. Why should standing so close to someone make her pulse jump? Was it simply because he was a male? "It's a novelty," she told herself. Or maybe it was because, poised this way, her hand clasped in his, their bodies separated by a breath, felt almost like the moment before an embrace. Or a fight. Why couldn't they just wrestle again? That had been easier, and she would win. Jason pressed his hand firmly to her back, and she nearly lost her footing.
"What are you doing?" she asked, more irritably than she'd meant to. "I'm trying to lead."
"Why?" It was hard enough to manage these strange movements in new shoes and a borrowed dress without him jostling her around.
"Because that's the way it's done."
"That's a lazy answer." He huffed a small, surprised laugh.
"Maybe it is," he said. "This is how I learned. I guess I don't know how to do it any other way."
Diana felt something in her relax. "I like it when you're honest," she said, realizing the truth of the words as she spoke them.
"When I make my case like a human," he said, a grin in his voice.
She let herself yield to the pressure of his hand, the tilt of his body, for now. Dancing might not be quite like fighting, but you still had to be careful when someone stepped into your guard.
"Better," he murmured.
Next time you can lead. What next time? She wanted to ask.
Alia's laugh floated over the crowd, and Jason swung Diana around gracefully, cutting through the other couples so they could keep Alia and Theo in view. They were laughing, breathless, hands clasped, spinning in a tipsy circle. Theo's style of dancing was definitely more theatrical than Jason's.
I don't hear Alia laugh enough, Jason said.
I suspect she'd say the same of you.
His shoulders lifted slightly in a shrug.
Maybe. She needs to meet more people, have more fun. But with the danger...
She's having fun now.
Well, I don't want her having too much fun, not with Theo.
Given the display with his father, Diana wasn't sure Theo was the best thing for Alia either. Even so, it was hard not to think of what Theo had said about Jason not wanting him around.
I thought you were friends.
We are, but Theo isn't exactly... steady. He falls in and out of love like a kid on a water slide. Falls hard, hits bottom, wants to go again.
His father seems to agree.
Jason winced. I know. He's too rough on Theo, but I understand his frustration. Theo is brilliant. He can write code, hack pretty much any security system. He just seems to want to spend all of his time gaming.
Is that so bad?
He could make a lot of money at it, if that's what you mean.
It isn't, Diana said, annoyed.
I just think he could do a lot of good if he wanted to.
Jason lifted his arm, his other hand pressing at Diana's back so she spun in a tight circle, the lights of the room whirling past.
But Theo doesn't want to listen to me any more than Alia does.
No one likes to be told what to do. You've chosen a future. Alia deserves the same chance.
She isn't ready. She trusts too easily. Case in point, you.
This again. Jason's wariness was understandable, but his assessment of his sister was so wrong-headed. She pulled back a little so that she could look at him. Alia didn't trust me because she's naive. She leaned on me because she had to.
And now you've conveniently gained access to our home and a party full of some of the most powerful people in New York.
There is nothing convenient about this for me. Jason hissed in a breath, and Diana realized she was clutching his hand like a vice as her anger rose. His hand gripped her waist, drawing her closer, his gaze fierce.
What brought you here, Diana Prince? How do you fight the way you do? How did you identify my security team?
Part of her wanted to pull away, but she refused to retreat. Instead, she leaned in, so close their mouths were almost touching. His eyes widened. Do you really think you'll get the answers you want by trying to bully me? She asked. He swallowed, then seemed to regain his composure.
I tend to be very good at getting what I want.
Diana's chin lifted. I think you've grown too used to people saying yes to you.
Have I?
But you have no idea how much I enjoy saying no.
The corner of Jason's mouth curled, his dimple flashing briefly. And Diana felt an unexpected surge of triumph. You think I'm a bully, he said, shifting his weight with ease, using his momentum to guide her.
Yes.
A jerk? He took another smooth, sure-footed step, his thigh brushing hers as they glided through the crowd.
Yes.
A budding tyrant?
That seemed a bit extreme, but she nodded anyway.
Jason laughed. You may be right.
He took advantage of her surprise to spin her. The lights of the room whirred around her, and she felt the swell of the music rise up through the floor as he drew her back into his orbit.
I know what people think of me. I know I'm not fun the way Theo is, or charming the way my parents were. None of this comes easy to me. But I also know I'm fighting for the right things.
She envied his certainty, the conviction in his voice. How can you be so sure? She asked.
Because I know what it would mean to lose them. Alia wants me to let Michael do more of the work, enjoy myself. She doesn't understand how fast we can be on the outside of what our parents created with no way back in.
Diana thought of her mother sitting at the table in the Iolanth court, speaking to one Amazon after another, the long meetings and debates and dinners, Diana waiting, always waiting, for a moment of her time.
I can never be seen to be shirking my duties, she'd said. To the Amazons, I must always be their queen first, and your mother second. Diana hadn't really understood, hadn't wanted to.